Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Come in. Theme in Yellow by Carl Sandburg. I spot the hills with yellow balls in autumn. I light the prairie cornfields, orange and tawny gold clusters, and I am called pumpkins. On the last of October, when dusk has fallen, children join hands and circle round me, singing ghost songs and love to the harvest moon. I am a jack-o'-lantern with terrible teeth, and the children know I am fooling. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio, Halloween week, day number two. This is Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And standing beside me in another state is...
I have very big feet. So yes, I'm standing here all alone. Blah, blah to you all as I gotta go. Okay.
All alone, but right next to us. This is really weird.
Exactly, yes. All alone.
We just changed.
Yeah.
We just changed a little bit of geography and we're all set.
There you go.
And speaking of weird, you're here with us at Eerie House Radio with three screamingly wonderful stories.
Yeah, I talked to Gar about one of them is really interesting. I don't know that we've shared a midnight cab. If we did, we just had one episode. This is a pretty intense episode. I have heard most of the episodes in this series, and this is one of the more intense ones. I really get a kick out of it, and so I'm looking forward to sharing this story tonight.
Yes.
I want to hear it too.
What's the premise of the midnight cab there, Dave?
This is a guy from a little town of less than 3,000 people in Canada, and he goes to the big city, in this case, Toronto, he wants to become a writer. And so, of course, to support himself while he's trying to become the next Canadian Ernest Hemingway, he drives the midnight cab, always finds a way to get himself into trouble, and always helps to solve the mystery. At the same time.
Yep.
Sometimes
and I can confirm this is the first time we're playing Midnight Cab, Dave.
Oh, really?
Good.
This is an intense story,
and you will catch him, right, Gar? You catch him saying A and things like that a couple times.
Does he? I'll have to pay attention to that one.
He's a young kid. He's like 19 years old when he heads into Toronto, leaving his small town, but not his small town ideals, you know.
Does he wear a
boot? I've been to Toronto. I tell you what, that may be one of the most international cities, certainly that I've ever been in. It's just absolutely amazing the blending of all nationalities in the city of Toronto, Canada.
Well, you
closest
you
I ever got was the
there,
falls.
Dave. You lost the hook out there, Dave. How did you ever end up in Toronto?
Well, we had one of our international conference of radio reading services, the IAAIS conference, and at the time, that was just before I became a board member there. So
cool.
Ooh.
I made it to Nova Scotia once.
I went to the falls and danced over to the other side real quick. Oh, Canada. All right, back in the USA.
you ran across the bridge and went, hey, and then you ran back. Okay.
Yeah. Back bacon, and then back home.
And then that was
hey,
it.
Hoser,
yeah,
got, so, any, got any jelly donuts, eh?
Hey, Hoser.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Hoser.
So we actually have a Venn diagram that intersects with Canada. That's crazy. All three of us.
Yeah, different parts of the country. It's a big country, Canada.
I think is it as big as the U.S. or not? Yes.
It,
pretty
it
close.
May
I
not
think.
Be as big, but it's pretty darn close.
A lot more barren though, more sparsely populated.
Yeah.
And they got all the polar bears up there and all those igloos, so you know it's a great place.
You like skiing.
If
a
you
lot.
Like skiing, there you go.
A lot.
Montreal. Okay.
And syrup. You got to be a tree sucker.
Fogsbane has been to Montreal. I was there with the 69 World Exposition. My one brother was too young, so he stayed with the neighbors. And my sister, myself, my mom and dad went up to the 1969 World Exposition in Montreal. So, and, you know, of course, we lived in Buffalo. So, although it was 1969, yeah.
No, I mean, you were 9 years old?
Yeah. I was 9 years old, yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Well, what they say when you go to Montreal, you really don't need to go to France.
Okay. But that
well,
is Quebec, I guess. Okay, sure, yeah.
More than
no, it's a very multicultural city.
Oh, okay.
Well, and actually, they've tried more than once to make French the national language there, and
they even
tried to kind of break off from Canada, which didn't go too well. But
they're in the middle. It's kind of hard to do the break off there. Yeah.
Whereas if you just go to France, they all speak French. I don't.
Yes.
Actually, yeah. I have a friend for 15 years that is in France.
Better than most people.
Yeah.
They speak French better than most people, I would say.
And they make great bread.
Yes.
Something named after them.
But oddly, not fries. The very thought makes me want to scream, and screaming is our topic tonight.
Yes.
A little segue there.
There's an air date.
We could get one. Where are we going to start with? What do you think, guys?
The cab? What, we were talking about the cab.
Sure. Let's do the cab. We'll start with the cab.
We can do the cab. We can do the cab thing.
Mystery of the Screaming Woman. And the original broadcast date is?
January 9th, 1993.
Why not?
Join us now for episode 9 of Midnight Cab, The Mystery of the Screaming Woman.
January 25th. The second thing I did when I got back to Toronto from my Christmas holidays in Big River was to take Krista out to a real fancy restaurant. The first thing I did was save the money to pay for it. It didn't turn out to be any big hassle or anything. We planned to park the car and use the fold-up wheelchair Krista keeps in the back, but the sidewalks were full of snow, so we had to double park out in front of the place, and Krista used her crutches to go in, and then she waited for me in the, I don't know, foyer, while I ran back out and parked the car. No big deal. But it's these kind of things you never think about. Snow on the sidewalk is a big obstacle. Like, you're grounded. If you live in a wheelchair.
Mm. How's your steak?
Mm-hmm.
How's your lobster?
Mm-hmm. Krista looked terrific. She outfoxed all the other women in the place, and it was a high-class restaurant, too. It had huge gilded mirrors on all the walls and plush velvet chairs. When I wasn't watching her, I was watching her reflection. She'd done something to her hair. I don't know what, but it looked more gold than blonde, all swept up and over on one side, and long, dangly earrings, and her lipstick seemed redder than usual, and her dress had a kind of deep scoop neck on it, and her skin was incredibly smooth and white, and her breasts were sort of right there.
And did that surprise you?
Oh, yeah. I expected more like a big city novel, bluesy, moody, Sonny Boy Williamson? I mean, that's what I wanted to write, but in the meantime, there were all these crazy images of this small town floating through my head. I kept pushing them back. Then I finally realized that's what's there. That's what I have to write.
Walker, how does that go? You can take the boy out of the country.
Yeah, but it's like, it's surrealistic. It's art.
Oh, well, that's good.
You're doing it to me again.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I'm glad you're writing, Walker.
Yeah. It's like a dam opened or something. One day, I'm going to write about you.
What about?
Oh. Your hair. Your eyes like blue crystal. Your neck.
That's the outside of me, not me.
No, I'll write about all of you.
Your eyes are the color of the chocolate pudding my mother used to make when I was a kid.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I love the way your nose bends in such a weird direction.
I love your nose.
I love your ears. I love the way your hair curls and falls over your collar. Our food's getting cold.
Yeah. And that was that. We didn't even bother going to the show afterwards. We went straight to my place at about 60 miles an hour. Her clothes, my clothes, they were strewn all over the place, floor, lamp, tape deck. It was great.
So, where is she?
Oh, I'm here, Sally. Where's Krista?
That's what I just asked you. I've been sitting here doing her job for 2 hours. She's 2 hours late.
She's never late.
Yeah. AP cabs. Okay, where do you want to go? What do you want to go there for? It's over, you jerk. It's midnight. Guy wants to go to the Leafs game. This city is full of disoriented people.
Did you phone her place?
Her mother says she came downtown early, about 4, to see if she could find Molly. She thought Krista might have hooked up with you later.
No, I haven't seen her. I saw her last night. We went out on our night off, but I haven't seen her since.
Yeah, well, this is terrific. I can't be wondering where people are all the time. This is not the lost and found. I'm trying to run a business here.
Who's Molly? Aren't you going to answer that?
The hell with it. It's the cab line. It's not Krista. And maybe we should phone the cops. What do you think?
Mr. Piattelli, who is Molly?
She's nobody. She's a bag lady. I found her a couple of winters ago living in the old wooden garage out back. I was going to give her the boot. I mean, what if the garage fell on her head, you know? But Krista, they got to be friends or something. Krista checks up on her once in a while.
Then Krista went to meet her today.
Well, you don't meet Molly. You find her.
Mr. Piattelli knew about this drop-in center on Dundas Street where Krista would sometimes take Molly. So we decided I'd check it out first, see if Krista had been there and if they knew where she might be now before we completely panicked and called the cops.
We can go in here. Want a coffee?
No, thanks.
We have 3 sleepovers tonight. When it's cold, if somebody wants to, we let them. We're not supposed to, fire regulations and all that, but the cops pretend they don't notice. It works out, except someone has to pull night shift. Guess who, eh?
So you wouldn't have seen Krista then, even if she came in today?
No. Sit down, take a load off. Maybe there's something in Molly's file. This isn't like an official counseling place or anything, but we keep some records. All these women want is a place to come in, get warm, have a coffee and a donut, talk if they want. Anything heavy at all, and they just disappear. Half of them are paranoid, you know, and the other half are as ornery as I am. Okay. Krista took Molly over to the clinic last Wednesday. She had an infected cut on her hand. Molly's not one of our regulars, you know. Krista's the only one who seems to know where she hangs out. Molly says she's 55. That's interesting.
Why?
Well, she looks like an old shoe and everything, but I bet she's not over 35. Here's something. Jenny's handwriting.
What is it?
Looks like a note to herself. Edward Cumberland, Victoria, B.C. Says he's Molly's brother. Call Krista. Can she find Molly?
Inspector Kiss, homicide.
Hi, Inspector. It's Walker Devereaux.
Still alive?
Yeah.
All your exploits, I thought you'd be stiffer than a board by now.
No, listen, I just wanted to say, I've got this friend. Well, she's my girlfriend, kind of, actually. And
well, I'm thrilled. Thanks for calling.
No, wait, I mean, could you do me a favor?
What?
Don't need to be missing a few hours, but it isn't like her at all, and I know I'll just get the runaround if I call missing persons, so I wondered if you could get the word out, you know, to the patrol car somehow, to look for her car. Please.
Not like her.
No.
And you called me. Okay, what's the car?
It's a 79 Toyota Tercel hatchback, painted bright orange, with black racing stripes.
Oh, yeah?
I gave Inspector Kiss the name of the woman at the drop-in center in case he wanted to talk to the other worker about Molly's brother. And I headed down to the foot of the city. That's where she said Molly would likely be, below river in Queen Street somewhere. It was bleak. Mostly warehouses and railroad tracks and transport trucks pulled off to the side waiting to load up in the morning. A maze of narrow streets, dead ends, frozen snowbanks surrounding the odd streetlight. Who could live down here out in the open? Who could survive? It was 2 o'clock in the morning. I circled and circled, and nothing moved. And no orange and black Toyota in sight.
Hey, Walk, are you there?
Yeah, Mr. Piadelli?
She hasn't showed up yet.
No?
Her old man, he keeps calling. He's got a thing about you. What time did Krista get home last night?
I don't know. I guess around 1:30.
Georgie Papadopoulos says it was more like 3. You ever meet Krista's old man?
Nope.
Yeah, well, he's this great big Greek guy, 6'4", he's a terrible temper, and he's upset.
So am I.
Yeah, hold on a minute, got another call.
Oh, jeez, Krista. Where are you? What the hell are you doing?
Walker, Inspector Kiss. He wants you to call him. He says find the phone right now.
Okay, Walker, we got it.
The car.
Fast, huh? Well, I got to admit the color helped. It's at the top of River Street, on the edge of Riverdale Park. It's empty.
No.
It's pulled off to the side of the road, doors unlocked, no indication of any struggle, blood. This girl, is she, what is she, handicapped or something? Hand controls.
Yeah, well, not really. I mean, she uses a wheelchair, crutches for short distances. I'll go up there.
Walker, the brother, Edward Cumberland.
Yeah?
Well, apparently he came around to that drop-in center a couple of days ago. They called Krista to see if she could help him locate his sister. So she met him there today, and the two of them went looking for Molly.
Okay.
Walker.
What?
This Edward Cumberland, we ran a check. He's staying at the King Edward Hotel, Suite 1605, but, well, he's not there right now. A funny thing, though.
What is?
Well, he's looking for his sister, and he's rented a bridal suite.
Well, maybe he's on his honeymoon.
I don't think so.
When I pulled my cab up behind Krista's car, there was no one in sight. No cops, nothing. I don't know. I expected a couple of cop cars, at least. Tracking dogs. Searchlights. The doors on her car were still unlocked. Her aluminum crutches were gone from the back. It seemed unlikely if someone were dragging her into another car, they'd let her stop for her crutches, unless she went willingly. But if she did, why wouldn't she have locked the car? Behind the last house on the street, the Don Valley stretched out to the east, black and deep, as if the city had been split in two. I could see the lights on Broadview Avenue as it wound its way up the far hill, and somewhere down in the middle of all that darkness, the Don River swept silently along, full of ice and debris. And then the cops arrived.
Is that your cab?
Yeah.
Are you Walker Devereaux?
Oh, yeah, that's me.
We found your friend's car.
What about my friend?
Nah, nobody's around. According to our information, she's only been missing for 4 hours.
Five hours.
Oh, 5 hours. Right. So, she could have had car trouble. She could be visiting in one of these houses. She could have gone off with friends.
Yeah, why wouldn't she have called?
Listen, I'll tell you what. If I knew the answer to that, we'd be able to calm down about 1,000 people a night. Here's what happened. She doesn't show up by tomorrow. We do a door-to-door along the street. We search the immediate area. We put out an information. But it has to wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, well, great, thanks.
And meanwhile, take it easy. Hey, it'll be okay.
Thanks.
I trudged through the snow towards Riverdale Park. The two cops sat in their cruiser watching me, probably thinking I was nuts. I didn't care. A wide path through the snow, made by dogs and their owners, kids on toboggans, cross-country skiers, worked along the edge of the ravine. Far below, a woods stretched out stark in the moonlight. I knelt down on the path. There were holes in the snow, all right, but it was hard to tell if they were from Krista's crutches or not, whether they were running parallel or just randomly spaced, the butt end of a hockey stick somebody's cane. Now the cops would be having a real laugh. Sherlock Holmes.
Krista, what are you doing to me? My stomach feels like I just swallowed a family of weasels.
And then I saw something lying further along in the path. It was just a plastic bag from a Max store, but inside, the frozen crust of someone's salami sandwich, a half-eaten apple, a half-eaten banana,
and a family of
cigarette butts carefully wrapped in cellophane.
Uh-huh.
And then, a little further along, scattered down the side of the ravine, some clothes, a wool hat, another one with a tassel, somebody's work gloves, a pair of woman's boots, an old tweed coat snagged on the branches of a bush, and a trench through the snow, straight down the sharp incline, as if someone half fell, half slid down into the trees below. I hesitated for half a second, then skied, slid on my bum, rolled down into the ravine, and came to rest on a pillow, or at least an old pillowcase still half full of cast-off clothes. I followed the trench through the snow I figured must have been made by Molly down through the trees, and came out on a path below. No Molly, no Krista.
Bum. He said bum. You're listening to Erie House Radio.
I thought that was kind of humorous myself. Instead of saying butt, he's laying down on his butt. He slept down on his bum.
Maybe that's Canadian. I don't know.
I think it is more so. It's because of the British influence. I could see that.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
A good story. Far more modern than I was expecting. 1990s.
Three.
Yeah. To be exact. Well,
and what they had was what was called the Mystery Project, or as they call it in Canada, Project. And they had a variety of things. The Old Guy, we played one of those. Flynn, we played one of those. And they do a number of these stories in a row, and go on to another one while, and if they like it, they renew it for another series of so many shows. I always like it just from the very first one. Now, the wife is not real fond of it, but I really like these stories. And it just, I don't know, maybe it's because, you know, there's a young guy who wants to be a writer, and so he just packs up and moves up to the big city like I wish I had the guts to do when I was his age, you know?
What was the longevity of this series, Midnight Cab? How many years?
How many years did that run?
Yeah.
It really wasn't years. It was a matter of episodes.
Oh.
Looking at here, the season one was a matter of 13 episodes. 13 episodes in season one. And season two... I don't think I've heard any of the season three, but season three is there. All they had 9 episodes in season two, and season three had 10, 12, 13 episodes. So that's a nice number of episodes all in all. So not bad.
Yeah, it looked. It had a limited cast, but you know, quite a few episodes there.
Yep, and written by all those episodes were written by one guy. I think that's kind of why you had them in bunches, that he could have time. And like in the UK, a lot of them, like Roy Clark, not the singer, but the writer, producer. Was most prolific, and he wrote most of his stuff by himself. And again, since the British usually have shorter series, a lot of times between, or did at least, a lot of times between 6 and 10, 12 episodes. Then you look back to see if BBC wants like 10 or 12 more, and they'll tell you how many they want, and that's what you put together for it. So
that
when it's split
cool.
up like that, it's a little easier for one guy to do the whole thing.
Uh-huh. Swallow a family of weasels.
That's right. He's squirming. And
I'm guessing you use a lot of maple syrup and salt to get that down. I don't know.
I don't know. I've
never tried a weasel. I have a book called Never Tease a Weasel. It's right over there. It's a kid's book. It was on Captain Kangaroo.
All I know is it's Wednesday in Scream Week, or Scream Day.
Yes. Yes.
On
right.
Hollow Scream.
Everybody, yep. Keep your ears peeled for screaming. Bound to happen soon. Any minute now. There you go. Any minute now.
Anytime now. It's like we almost planned it.
You know, that is such a weird thing that scream has gotten so much action over the years. I mean, it's in everything. There's probably an episode of MASH that has the Wilhelm scream in it. I mean, it's just everywhere. It's still used today.
Yeah, it's just the same. And it's just such a thing that everybody caught on and wanted it to be part of their show or movie at some point or other.
Yeah. I think it's become an homage at this point.
Yeah, I mean, because there are a lot of scream queens out there that have great lungs to sit there and scream their head off, and yet they're still using the Wilhelm.
As well they should.
As well they should, yeah. Yeah. Linnea Quigley, I forget her name. She was a great scream queen. She might take exception to that, but yeah. Gosh, wow.
She fell out the window.
Put those potatoes anywhere.
Yeah. Told you not to leave those banana peels laying around.
I know. It gets our potato driver, delivery driver every time.
That's right. Teach you to come in without knocking. That's for
sure. I know. How dare they?
Let us wrap up.
Yes.
Midnight Cab, Mystery of the Screaming Woman.
But through the dark mass of trees, I could see the pinpoint of a fire, and further along, down on the flat, another one. And further again, close to where the river must be, across the road that runs through the bottom of the valley, another faint red glow. Campfires. I walked down the path until it circled back over a deep cut in the ravine spanned by a wooden bridge. A large pipe jutted out of the side of the cut, and heated water from somewhere trickled out of the end of it, and a billow of steam. A man was sitting beside it, shapeless inside a couple of bulky overcoats, scarf tied around his head, a bottle firmly clasped in his hand. Beneath the bridge, there was a kind of lean-to made out of plastic wrap and cardboard, and inside, a few other dark, formless shapes curled up tight in sleep. A family of trolls. Guarding the bridge.
Oh, live long. Excuse me. Hello? Hey.
What?
Hey. I'm looking for a young woman. Young woman on crutches. Have you seen anyone?
Hey, Happy New Year, eh? Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. And I'm the chief of police.
No kidding.
Yep. Happy New Year to you, huh?
Okay.
And a camp town lady sings song.
I left him, now shrouded in blowing steam as if he were sitting in a Turkish bath, and headed over the bridge, telling myself, I'll only go another 100 feet, then I'll turn back. But then I went another 100 feet, and another, until the path crossed an old road cut into the side of the hill. I could see down the road a ways the looming dark shape of an old building, the high stone walls of an abandoned mill. Krista.
Krista!
It seemed incredible. I could have been walking down a logging road north of Big River, but I wasn't. I was in the middle of, down in the dark basement of, 3 million sleeping people. Anybody in here? No. I couldn't see a thing, but I could smell something. A smudgy, oily fire, smoke stinging my eyes. I took one step further into the inky black, my hands out in front of me, groping for a wall, a post. But the first thing I felt was somebody's face.
Don't move. Don't breathe. Don't even blink, man.
I won't.
Feel that? What's that, huh?
I don't know.
It's a knife, man.
Okay.
It's a very sharp knife, man.
I'm just looking for someone, that's all. Can you, let go of my neck?
I killed a guy, you know. 8 years in Stony Mountain Pen.
Yeah?
Yeah, a foot and a half scar. All my guts were hanging out.
Yeah?
Yeah. Self-defense. I know who you're looking for.
With that, he let go of my throat and disappeared into the dark. Then I saw his darker shape go through an opening in the wall. I stumbled after him, stepped into a long, murky, smoke-filled room like a barracks. Plastic garbage bags flapped against the wind in the empty windows. A couple of oil rag fires smoldered in the dark. People huddled close to them, sleeping under blankets and overcoats.
Walker? It's about time, Walker.
Oh, jeez, Krista.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's me.
Oh, what happened?
I'm glad to see you.
What happened to you?
I fell. Well, I tried to get away from him, but he caught up to her, and he was hitting her. And she was calling out for me to help her, so I tried. I tried to go down the path, but I couldn't do it. I fell.
It's okay. You're okay.
I couldn't do it.
You must be Mr. Wright, eh?
Yeah, well...
Yeah, Tony over there and his girlfriend, they found her lying on the path. It was almost dark. The other ones, well, we already got them.
What other ones?
Krista struggled to get up from under the plastic sheet that covered her. I could tell she was hurting, but she didn't say anything. She leaned on me, and we went over to what looked like a bunch of dirty rags piled in some newspapers.
Molly. She's asleep.
Krista pulled back the collar of an overcoat. A woman was nestled inside. Strands of her hair, straw-colored and limp, covered her face, a face ruddy from the winter wind, worn smooth by weather, cut deep by lines. She looked worn, tired, but still she didn't look all that old. 35, like that worker in the drop-in center had said. Her nose was freshly broken, dried blood on her cheek.
I should have known. But at first he was nice, you know, he seemed kind. Molly didn't say anything. She was just really silent. And then when the three of us were in my car, she freaked. She started to scream, this terrible scream. As if she was afraid of something no one else could see. I had stopped the car and let her out. He told me to go on. He'd try to calm her down for a moment, but if he couldn't, he'd just leave. He'd catch a cab. But I didn't. I circled around the block. And when I came back, they were in the park. And he wasn't talking anymore. He was shaking her. And then he started to throw all her stuff down the hill. So I got out and tried to help. Jerry, the guy you met over there?
The guy with the knife.
Does he have a knife?
Yeah.
He said her brother dragged her in here. He was screaming at her, bashing her face up against the wall. So they jumped him. Some of them know Molly. It's kind of like a small town down here.
Where's your brother now?
Jerry says they stuck him up in the loft. Walker, I hate the guy, but he could be hurt. He could freeze up there.
What loft? Where?
Well, I don't know exactly.
Jerry, though he couldn't have cared less himself, told me to follow him through the dark and up a ramp of long, springy floorboards to a kind of ledge along the wall, all that was left of the second floor. Then he stood at the foot of a slender ladder, moved it over about a foot. I looked up. I couldn't see anything up there.
He's okay, you know, man. He's got a blanket.
Jerry disappeared back into the dark, and I started to climb up the old wooden ladder, springing back and forth. And then I came to the end of it, felt the cold stone wall, and directly above my head, a wooden floor, a trap door. I shoved it open, and moonlight shone down on my face. The stone walls of the mill towered above me with empty rows of windows banked with snow, and straight up instead of a roof, the moon rode in a cloudless sky. The snow was well trampled by the trapdoor, and all over the floor, tracks leading off here and there. I looked around. No movement. Nothing. And then I noticed, in the far corner, a deeper shadow in the shadows. I walked slowly towards it.
Cumberland? Edward Cumberland?
At first, the ragged blanket didn't move. And then it opened slowly, and the moonlight caught the sight of a man's face as he slowly looked up at me.
Are you
one of Molly's little friends?
Yes.
You don't know her.
Well, no.
No. You don't know her. She was beautiful. When she was a child, she was young. She was exquisite. You ever heard that word? No. You don't know that word. It was our private word. Exquisite. Rapture. She went away. For years and years, I couldn't find her. That's not Molly down there. No. No.
Come on. Can you stand up? You better get warm.
Have you ever tried to recapture the past? The sweetness, rapture of the past? Mother and father off somewhere. And the grass as green as peppermint under your window. And the gardens filling with the air of delicious perfume. And the curtains moving like gossamer.
Can't go back. Stay here. You'll freeze. I am Edward Cumberland. I own a real estate company. I employ 27 salesmen and 8 staff.
Oh. He grabbed the edge of his blanket and he started to rock. Rock back and forth. It was like I was watching someone disintegrate, crumble, before my eyes. And then, I heard a noise behind me whirled. Inspector Kiss was halfway out of the hole, staring across the snow at me.
Hello, Walker. You having a nice night?
Oh, what are you doing?
We've had enough, Aretha. Let's have a little Sonny Boy Williamson.
Oh. What time is it anyway?
One 1:30.
I should go home. My father, he gets weird. Not that it's any of his business.
Inspector Kiss had brought a small army of cops with him. They took Molly to St. Mike's to fix up her nose and her brother to Wellesley to patch him up, and then they booked him on assault. He didn't seem to care. Krista went up to Sunnybrook to check her hip. It was okay, and then she went home. Inspector Kiss did some checking on Edward and Molly Cumberland. They'd come from a wealthy family in Victoria. When Molly was 12, she was sent off suddenly to a girls' school in Edmonton, and at the same time, Edward was sent off to some schools in Europe. A few years later, Molly just drifted out of sight. Edward took over his father's business, lived in the family home with his mother, and when she died, he hired an agency to look for Molly. The bridal suite at the King Edward Hotel went unused.
What time is it now?
It's about 3.
I should go.
Yeah.
Krista recuperated at home for a few nights. Then one day we just kind of looked at each other, and we went back to my place. And we just held each other and talked about Molly, and held each other and talked about what kind of hell it must have been for her. Edward preying on her when she was growing up, and held each other, and wondered whether Molly could ever be capable of charging Edward with something more serious than common assault, and decided probably not, and held each other. And then, well, you know.
Krista.
Hmm?
Sometimes, I mean, anytime, I wouldn't want you to think you couldn't leave. You know what I mean?
Yes, Walker. I know what you mean. Guess what?
What?
Same goes for you.
You have just heard Midnight Cab, Episode 9, The Mystery of the Screaming Woman, written by series creator James W. Nichol. Featured in the cast were David Ferry as Walker and Jacqueline Samuda as Krista, with Howard Jerome as Mr. Piatelli and Neil Monroe as Inspector Kiss. Chappelle Jaffe was the drop-in center worker and Michael Dyson played the policeman. You heard Wayne Robson as Camper and Tony DeSantis as Jerry, with special guest star Gary Reinecke as Brother Edward. Music for the series is composed by Milan Kimlicka, casting consultant Linda Grierson. Our recording engineer is Joanne Anka, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. The series production assistant is Nancy Dow. Midnight Cab is produced and directed in Toronto by Bill Howell.
With Jerry Mathers as the Beaver.
And Maple Shutter.
Well, he is just everywhere, that Jerry Mathers.
Uh-huh. Yes, he is. Case of the Falling Woman, Screaming Woman. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Most of the mentally ill keep the ill and add a P, cause they get a pill. There you go.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Johnny.
Uh-huh.
Swiss blade, blade.
So what did you think of that story, Dale? You like Midnight Cab?
I did. It had a sad ending, kind of, but yet a little adult, but not, you know, out of control for our show.
You know, what was funny, like the very first episode, he just gets into town. Of course, he runs out of money, so he's going to drive a cab, and he picks up a woman at a grocery store. When he opens the trunk for the first time to put her groceries in, there's a dead body there. That's how he starts this series.
Great way to start the day.
Yep, and a job, and... And oops, maybe here come the police.
Yikes. And the questions. Always the questions.
So I'm guessing
always
throughout the
questions.
Series he... Am I on? Let me look here. Oh, yeah. So I guess throughout the series, as it builds, he gets a stronger and stronger relationship with the local police, right?
It starts pretty much on that first episode and grows from there, yeah.
Yep.
Because the inspector never thought he had anything to do with it.
Right.
We will have to have Midnight Cab again. That was good.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice, very nice. Onward now for another screaming
onward.
Good tale.
Onward and upward, yes.
Made to make you shriek. The Screaming Woman from Bradbury 13.
Yeah. Oh.
Yep, good old Bradbury
and...
13, mm-hmm. back from 1983 and 84. Actually, it was aired nationally on NPR Playhouse. It aired these episodes aired on over 250 radio stations at the time.
Jeez.
Not bad,
Pretty good distribution.
I would say Brad. Mm-hmm. Bradbury probably had a little bit of weight, so he could, you know... you hear the Bradbury name, you go, oh, yeah, so a bunch of people signed up.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure that opens doors.
Uh-huh.
And of course, they got the great Paul Frees to be their narrator throughout it.
Yes, yes, and that voice, you just cannot mistake that voice. Just amazing.
One of my
favorite
announcers.
This particular episode kind of almost whimsical, but very good.
Yep. Paul Frees is one of my favorites. So what is it? One of the channels on Pluto TV has been running War of the Worlds, and you actually see him briefly in that.
Yes,
right.
He's in that, and he's in one other film. Unfortunately, and I'm really saddened by this, but Paul Frees was not in a lot of horror movies. So, and The War of the Worlds is sci-fi horror, but he was in one other one where he was a mad scientist, and he didn't last that long. Whatever he was doing killed him, and they got rid of him really quick. But you got to see him, because it was like, oh, that's what it looks like, you know.
I've seen him in a few movies because you can't mistake his voice, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But as far as horror, I only know of one other one. It was a black and white.
It seems to me like he'd be an extremely difficult guy to do an impression of.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't even. You'd have to have his voice. You'd have to.
Wouldn't that be
his,
like doing an impression of Rich Little?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what that guy sounds like, but yeah.
No one really knows. He's not a real person.
Well, he made his living sounding like other people, so yeah.
Yes.
Whereas our guy we're talking about made his living sounding just like himself.
An amazing replication.
Amazing, yep.
And it lent the great... He was in Beanie and Cecil, right? Wasn't he?
Was he?
Pretty sure.
Paul Frees?
Yeah, wasn't he? I'm pretty sure he was. He did a lot of things with our pal Stan Freberg. And Freeberg got his starts in going back into Beanie and Cecil.
He also did a few things with Spike Jonze as well. Not only just the My Old Flame, he did the Peter Lorre voice for that. But he also was throughout the Spike Jonze Spooktacular, Spike Jonze and Hi-Fi, which was a horror type thing.
Yeah, that is one of the great novelty Halloween albums.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
And he played several voices in that and sang in some of the different. He was singing about half the including an updated version of My Own Flame.
Oh.
It also was the Frankenstein Monster and Everything Happens to Me. And I forget all the other songs that he also was part of, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, vocally, you know, you couldn't touch him. I mean, he was a universe unto himself. Just amazing, great stuff.
Yep. Paul Frees was the interviewer for Beanie and Cecil. Hal Smith, what's his name from, the town drunk from Andy Griffith, was in that show. Robert Clampett, of course, was Beanie and other voices. Mm-hmm. Scatman Crothers did a few voices for Beanie and Cecil.
That is one of the funniest.
You know
Hal... Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, Hal Smith.
Go ahead.
I'm backing off.
Go ahead, Dave. Take it.
No, I was just going to say something else that Hal Smith did that not only... I think he was one of the best-known voices that did Goofy. And that yell of Goofy going down that was Hal Smith.
Ah. Wow. They also, Don Messick, who later became Scooby-Doo, Mae Questel, formerly Olive Oil, Jack Mercer, formerly Popeye, were also voices.
But for a kid show, that thing was loaded. It was
packed with great talent.
Yeah, it was this kids show, but it was a Saturday morning show, but it was really written for adults. There was enough action in there for kids, but some of the things they said, kids went right over their heads.
right over their heads, yes.
Yep. But those kids later on would grow up to go on and listen to Bradbury 13.
Yes, they and would.
They probably heard tonight's episode, The Screaming Woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That aired on May 14, 1984.
Ooh. I'll buy it.
This is Ray Bradbury. Join me for the next 30 minutes on a tour through time and space. Come along to the far future. Follow me into a strange past with stories that almost could be or might have been. Real or unreal, this is Bradbury 13.
Margaret Leary is 10 years old and likes to play in the vacant lot on long summer days. She and her friends like to play pirates and bank robbers and cowboys. One summer afternoon, Margaret was playing in the lot and discovered there was something buried deep in the ground. And it was still alive. Ray Bradbury's The Screaming Woman.
Margaret Leary, and I'm in the fifth grade at Central School. I haven't any brothers or sisters, but I've got a nice father and mother, except they don't pay much attention to me. Anyway, we never thought we'd have much to do with a murdered woman. Or almost. When you're living on a street like we live on, you don't think awful things are going to happen, like shooting or stabbing or burying people under the ground, practically in your own backyard. You just go on buttering your toast or baking a cake. But I gotta tell you how it happened. It was noon on a steamy hot Saturday in the middle of July, and Mama came out the back door.
Margaret, here's a dollar. Go to the store and get us some peppermint ice cream.
Really?
Yes, Daddy's home for lunch, so we'll have a treat. And bring back the cake.
I took the shortcut through the empty lot behind our house. It was a big lot with weeds and holes and broken glass and stuff. And on my way back from the store, I was hurrying along so the ice cream wouldn't melt. When all of a sudden, it happened. My gosh, what's that? It's coming from the ground. Oh my gosh, there's a woman buried down there. A woman under the ground. Oh my gosh. Lady, I'll be right back. I'll get you out. Mama, 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 there's a...
Don't stand there with the ice cream dripping.
But Mama...
Put it in the icebox.
Listen, Mama, there's a screaming woman in the empty lot.
And wash your hands. They're filthy.
She was screaming and screaming.
Of course she was. Wash your hands and hurry to the table.
Listen to me. We gotta dig her out. She's buried under tons and tons of dirt. And if we don't dig her out, she'll choke up and die.
I'm certain she can wait until after lunch.
Mama, don't you believe me?
Of course, dear. When you've finished your hands, take this plate of meat to your father in the dining room.
Yes, ma'am. But I don't even know who she is. And we gotta help her before it's too late.
Good heavens, look at this ice cream. What did you do, just stand out there in the sun and let it melt?
I told you, there's this woman in there.
Oh, go on, scoot in there with the plate.
I'm going. Hi, Dad. There's a screaming woman in the empty lot.
I never knew a woman who didn't.
I mean, for real.
You look serious.
We've got to get picks and shovels and dig, like for an Egyptian mummy.
I don't feel like an archaeologist, Margaret. Maybe when it gets a little cooler outside, like in October, we'll go and dig that mummy up.
But we can't wait that long.
Pass the mustard, please.
Dad, you just got to come out after lunch and help me.
Mm-hmm.
Dad.
Margaret, turn the radio on.
Dad, I'll give you all the money in my piggy bank.
No, so it's a business proposition, is it? How much do you pay an hour for digging?
I got it. $5 whole. It took me a year to save. You can have it all if you come out and help me.
Margaret, you're serious about that money, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh, you know, you really make your old dad feel like a piker.
A piker?
You want me to play with you, and you're willing to pay me for my time. Oh, I don't give you enough time, do I? Tell you what, after lunch I'll come out and listen to your screaming woman, free of charge. How's that?
Will you really?
Yes, ma'am, that's what I said. But you have to promise me something.
What?
You eat your lunch first, and then I'll come out.
I promise.
Okay.
Hey, lady, slow down. You're gulping your food.
But...
You heard your mother.
But the screaming woman, we gotta hurry.
I intend to sit here quietly and judiciously, giving my attention first to my steak, then to my potatoes and my salad, and of course then to my ice cream. And after that, to a long drink of iced coffee, if you don't mind. I may be a good hour at it. And another thing, young lady, if you mention this screaming, what is it, one more time at this table during lunch, I won't go out with you to hear her recital. Is that understood?
Yes, sir.
Now eat slowly.
Speaking of screaming, Charlie and Helen Nesbitt had another fight last night.
Well, that's nothing new. They're always fighting.
If you ask me, Charlie's no good. Or her either.
I don't know. I think she's all right.
You're just prejudiced.
Prejudice?
Well, you did almost marry her.
That again. I was only engaged to her for 6 weeks.
Well, at least you had sense enough to break it off.
Oh, you know, Helen, always stage struck. Wanting to be a movie star, longing for Hollywood. But I just couldn't see a marriage like that working. It was kind of sweet, though. Sweet and very kind.
And what did it get her? A big brute like Charlie.
He's got a temper, all right. Remember when Helen had the lead in her high school play? Pretty as a picture. She wrote the songs for it herself. That was the summer she wrote that song for me.
Huh.
Don't laugh. It was a catchy song.
You never told me about that.
No, it was between Helen and me. Besides, I forgot all about it until now. What did that song go?
Dad!
All right, I'm eating. Finish your potato.
Finally, after the slowest meal in the history of eating, I took Dad out to the empty lot, where it was still hot and covered with old bottles and newspapers.
Now, where's this screaming woman?
We forgot the shovel.
We'll get him later, after I hear her.
She's over here, under these rocks. Listen.
I don't hear anything.
Shh, wait.
Margaret.
Hey there, screaming woman.
Honey, I suggest you get in out of the sun and lie down for a while.
But she was here. I heard her screaming and screaming. See, here's where the ground's been dug up. Hey, you down there, can you hear me?
Margaret, this is the place Mr. Kelly dug up yesterday to bury that big sack of trash. We watched him, remember?
But during the night, someone else used Mr. Kelly's hole to bury a woman in, and then covered it all up.
Well, I'm going in out of the sun and take a nice, cool shower.
You won't help me dig?
Mr. Kelly might not like us digging up his trash. Oh, it's too hot to stay here anyway. And don't get dirty.
Dawn, he's gone. There! She's screaming again. Maybe she was just tired and now she's all rested. Dad, she's screaming again. Come here, she's
Margaret.
Screaming. Dad, she's screaming just like before.
I know. Now, come on, you're going inside.
But, Dad!
I think you'd better get upstairs and lie down for a while. You'll feel better in an hour or so.
But...
Move! Hop in bed.
But, Daddy, we can't let her die. She's all buried like that man in the story by Edgar Allan Poe. And think how awful it is to be down there screaming and no one's paying any attention to you.
You're going to lie there the rest of the afternoon and take it easy. And you're not to leave the house, understand? Now, close your eyes.
Oh, Daddy, I wish you'd believe me. Maybe I could yell out the window about the screaming woman and someone would hear me. No, they'd just be like Mom and Dad and not pay any attention. There's just one thing to do. I've got to climb out the window, get some shovels from the garage, and dig her out myself. But I've got to hurry. I can't dig any faster. It's too hot. I gotta rest. I didn't know digging was such hard work.
Hiya, Margaret.
Hi, Dippy.
What are you doing?
Digging.
For what?
There's a screaming lady in the ground, and I'm digging for her.
I don't hear no screaming.
Just sit down and wait a while, and you'll hear her scream. You could even help me dig while you're listening.
I don't dig unless I hear her scream.
There! Did you hear it?
Hey, that's good, Margaret. Do it again.
Do what again?
The scream.
The scream?
Yeah, go on, do it. Here, look it. Do it again, and I'll give you my favorite marble, my brown Aggie. Hot dog! Can you teach me to do it?
I don't.
Did you get the Throw Your Voice book from that magic company in Texas? You got one of those tin-run Trollquist things in your mouth?
That's right, Dippy. And if you help me dig, I'll show it to you later.
It's a deal. Give me a shovel. Boy, you'd think she was right under your feet. What do you call her?
Who?
The screaming woman. You must have a name for her.
Oh, sure. Her name's Luma Schreiger, and she's rich, and she's 96 years old, and was buried by a man named Spike, who was a counterfeiter.
Wow.
And there's a box of treasure buried with her, and I'm a grave robber come to dig her up.
Can I be a grave robber, too?
Sure.
Hey, just pretend she's a prick of almond ramen, and she's a mummy covered with diamonds and rubies.
Okay, just keep digging.
Hey, I just got an idea.
Dippy, where are you going?
I'm going to get a piece of cardboard and make a sign that says Slumberland Cemetery and stick it in the ground and bury some birds and beetles and stuff here.
No, Dippy.
It's more fun that way. I know where I can get a dead cat, too.
Dippy, keep digging, please.
Oh, I'm tired. I think I'll go home and cool off.
You can.
Says who?
Dippy, there's something I need to tell you.
What?
There really is a woman buried down here.
Sure there is, Maggie.
You don't believe me either.
Tell me how you throw your voice and I'll keep digging.
I can't tell you because I'm not doing it.
Okay, see you around.
Look, I'll stand way over here, see? And you stay there and listen. See?
Hey, there really is a woman buried down there.
That's what I've been trying to tell you.
Let's see.
Now you're talking.
You know, I think most of us, when we think of Ray Bradbury, we think sci-fi. And it's easy to forget that he was very, very adept at horror.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the human condition as well. I remember a story Dave Roden read for us on when he was short time he was reading science fiction stories. This really wasn't science fiction. It was called The Laurel and Hardy Love Affair. Absolutely touching story that he wrote. It's like saying the only thing that Stephen King writes is horror. And it's not true.
That's
I've got his book of poetry. Yeah.
There once was a... No.
Yeah, no. We're going to stay away from those.
No, okay, all right. Limericks there.
Yeah.
I was just going to say what a wonderful... This whole Bradbury 13, every episode was such... great adaptions of his stories, just absolutely amazing.
This one is absolutely chilling. I mean, you're agonizing with this woman
yes.
under the crown. The kid is earnestly trying to get the woman out, I don't know what she can hear, but it's got to be frustrating.
And this is one of the crazy things about radio and where it takes your mind is, as a listener, you're suffocating because you're like, you know, there's a lady under here. You got to get her out. Nobody believes this little kid. It's just really crazy.
No, and it's a real plausible story because you know how kids mm-hmm. are, and it's really, yeah, whatever, kid, go away.
Yeah, there's that in there. That Loki, go away, get your bottomy. That
yeah.
whole, you know.
Well, it's much like the Zero Hour where the kids are playing the game and the parents just think they're playing games. They don't take what mm-hmm. the kids are doing seriously.
Until it's almost too late.
until the aliens are walking up the steps. Yeah. Wasn't that it? Wasn't that the one where the aliens?
They
barricade themselves up in the attic, and the aliens are coming. And the kids tell them that. Well, what's its name? Zinc? No, it was some name for the alien.
Something like yeah.
It was like Zinc. That wasn't it. Mink, Nink, something.
Zeldar.
Yeah.
No.
Zeldar. Yeah, sure. Let's play hula hoops on my cone. That guy?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, that one. They're from France or Quebec.
Yes,
you know,
just say we're from France.
Yeah, we are from France. this is just crazy, and the fact that no one will listen to the little kid. I'm sorry, sometimes you have to listen to the kid because they're not, they're still a person. They're still, you know, it's like, unless the kid is like a chronic liar or something, you know, I don't know.
Like Gilligan. Everybody wouldn't listen to Gilligan, and once in a while he actually was warning them that something was going to happen.
Once in a while. Yeah. Well,
once
the rest
in a while.
Of the time, the rest of the time he had overindulged on coconut juice or something, and we don't know what he's talking about.
coconut squeezins.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
It's an island. There's not much to do.
I don't know. That's a crazy premise. You take a X number of adults and you put them on an island, and you know you get a G-rated show out of it. It's crazy, and they did it, and there you go.
Yep.
Wild, and it worked, and it was more successful than they knew. Although it did get canceled, and it was like they showed up for work, and it was like the doors were locked or something. It was very abrupt, from what I understand.
Yeah. It was a great show. They had a wide variety of characters, you know. They had a millionaire.
Oh, yeah. They had
a millionaire and his wife,
mm-hmm.
a movie star,
mm-hmm.
and the rest. Yeah.
But they also had – they had the airplane pilot. They had so many guests on there. It's amazing they never got up. But they had the – the airplane pilot that flew backwards or something, I can't remember, but he was a very famous...
Wrong Way Feldman.
And he was a voice guy. Can't remember his name. He was a...
Sir Everett Edward Horton, I think, maybe?
No, he was... Who did he do the voice of? Snidely Whiplash.
Oh, yes.
The voice... Yes.
Well, who the heck was that? I don't know. We'll figure that out after we
wrap up this very scary
tale. I actually find this one quite chilling. Bradbury 13, The Screaming Woman.
A lot of screaming, yes.
I wonder who she is.
I don't know.
I wonder if it's Mrs. Nelson or Mrs. Turner or Mrs. Bradley. I wonder how she got down there.
Keep digging.
I bet she rewards us for digging her up.
Sure. At least a quarter apiece.
More than that. I bet it's a dollar. I read a book on magic once, and there was a tender guy with no clothes on who got down in a grave and slept there 60 days and nights and didn't eat anything. Say, what if it's just a radio buried down there, and we did all this for nothing?
Well, a radio's nice,
We could keep it.
Hey, you kids, what do you think you're doing?
Mr. Kelly, you scared the daylights out of me.
Now, I'll tell you what I want you to do. I want you to take those shovels and put that dirt right back where you got it. You understand?
But, Mr. Kelly, there's a screaming woman down there.
A screaming woman? Well, I don't hear anything.
Well, just listen.
Don't hear a thing. Now, go on, fill it up. Get on home before I give you my boot.
Yes, sir.
Go on now. Hurry up. I'll be watching you from my window.
He's the one. Huh? He murdered Mrs. Kelly and buried her here in a box. But she woke up after he buried her.
Yeah. He stood right here while she screamed and said he didn't hear her. He lied to us.
There's only one thing to do.
What?
We've got to call the police and have them come arrest Mr. Kelly. Come on. Keep down, Dippy.
I don't like hiding in these bushes. What if Mr. Kelly catches us?
He won't. Look, here comes the police.
Get down! I can't see!
Shh!
Yes?
Mr. Kelly?
Yes. What can I do for you?
Is Mrs. Kelly at home?
Yes, she is.
May we see her, sir?
Of course.
Yes, what is it?
I beg your pardon, folks. We had a report that you were buried out in an empty lot, Mrs. Kelly.
What?
It sounded like a child made the call, but we had to be certain. Sorry for the inconvenience.
It's those blasted kids. If I ever catch them, I'll...
Maggie, let's get out of here. Run!
What do we do now?
I gotta go home. Boy, we're really in trouble now. We'll get a licking for this.
But what about the screaming woman?
To heck with her. We don't dare go back to that empty lot again. Mr. Kelly will be waiting for us for sure. He'll lambast the heck out of us. Hey, I just remembered something.
What?
Isn't old man Kelly sort of deaf? Don't he wear a hearing aid sometimes?
Oh, my gosh. No wonder he didn't hear a thing.
Boy, we sure got into a lot of trouble over your dumb ventriloquist voice. I gotta go. Bye.
Dippy! Dippy! Darn. Now what do I do? The police are after me now for lying to them. And my dad's probably looking for me by now, too. There's only one last thing to do. I've got to go from house to house and knock on every door and ring every bell and see if there are any ladies missing. It might take me all day, but I got to do it. Boy, I'm pooped. 15 doors so far and no luck. I wonder if Helen Nesbitt's home. The one Dad almost married.
Yes?
Mr. Nesbitt.
Oh, it's you, Margaret.
Yes, good afternoon.
Well, what can I do for you?
Well, I came to see Mrs. Nesbitt.
Oh?
May I?
Well, she's not here right now. She's gone to the store.
I'll wait. Can I come in?
Hey, wait a minute.
Boy, it sure is nice and cool in here. Can I sit down? Oh, nice chair.
Listen, kid, I don't think you better wait.
How come?
Well, my wife won't be back.
Oh?
Not today, that is.
I thought you said she went to the store.
Well, she did, but she's going on from there to visit her mother. She won't be back for a couple of days, maybe a week or two.
That's a shame.
Why's that?
I wanted to tell her something.
What?
I wanted to tell her there's a woman buried over in the empty lot, screaming under tons and tons of dirt. Are you all right, Mr. Nesbitt?
Well, yes, of course. Well, I'll be sure and tell Helen when she comes home. She'll be glad to hear it.
Thanks.
It's a real woman, you know.
How do you know that?
I heard her.
You heard her?
That's right. Screaming.
How do you know it isn't a mandrake root?
What's that?
Well, it's kind of a plant, kid. They scream.
They do?
Yeah, I read it once. How do you know it isn't a mandrake?
I never thought of that.
Well, you better start thinking. Did you say anything about this to anyone?
Sure. I told lots of people.
Anybody doing anything about it?
No. Nobody believes me.
Of course they don't. You're just a kid, aren't you?
I'm going back now and dig her out.
Wait.
I gotta go.
Oh, stick around.
Thanks, but I gotta get back.
Hey, you know how to play cards, kid?
I can play blackjack.
Hey, good. We'll have a game.
I gotta go dig.
Plenty of time for that. Anyway, maybe my wife will be home before long. You can wait for her while we play cards.
You think she'll be home, huh?
Well, sure, kid. Say, that voice in the ground, is it very strong?
No, it gets weaker all the time.
Sit down, Margaret. Let's play that game of blackjack. It's more fun than playing Screaming Woman.
I gotta go.
Well, stick around. My wife will be home in 10 minutes. Let's play. You deal first. Well, your luck's holding. You win again.
It's late. I gotta go now.
A few more minutes, kid. My wife will come home any time now. Your deal. Well, getting dark. I guess you can go now. Guess you'll have to see my wife some other time, huh?
Sure, Mr. Nesbitt.
So long, kid.
But Mr. Nesbitt insists that I stay and play cards. I kept thinking maybe you'd really come back like you said, but I guess he was just wasting time until you quit screaming. Are you still there? Maybe if I get down and put my ear on the ground, I could hear you better. Lady? Mrs. Nesbitt? Can you hear me? I'll hold my breath so I can hear better.
I loved you, sir. I loved you well.
Singing? She's singing. All those hours down under the ground in that box must have made her sort of crazy. Mrs. Nesbitt, you'll be okay. All you need is some food and some air, and you'll be fine. Hang on, I'll get some help. Dad will help. I know he will. He used to love her once. He said he did. Dad! Dad!
So, there you are.
Dad, you got it!
You're going to get a licking. I told you not to leave your room.
Anymore.
I told you not to talk about her.
She's singing now.
Singing? Why are you telling me these lies?
Dad, she's out there and she'll be dead soon if you don't listen to me. She's out there singing. It's a little song like, I loved you fair, I loved you well.
What did you say?
I said, I loved you fair, I loved you well.
Where did you hear that song?
I told you, out in the empty lot just now.
That's Helen's song, the one she wrote years ago for me. You can't know it. Nobody knew it except Helen and me. I never sang it to anyone, not you or anyone.
I know!
Margaret, we have to hurry. Now show me exactly where it was.
I was so happy, I wanted to cry. My dad ran out to the empty lot and started digging. And lots of other people came and helped him.
No, dig over here. Get some more shovels. We need more people digging here.
Everything turned out fine, except for Mr. Nesbitt.
Dig, dig!
But most important, the screaming woman isn't screaming anymore.
Hey, Dippy!
Yeah?
We found the screaming woman!
No kidding!
Yeah, everything's fine! Hey, wanna go dig for treasure?
Sure!
I'll meet you in the empty lot in 5 minutes.
That one there's a monkey's uncle.
See you there!
The Screaming Woman was adapted from the story by Ray Bradbury. Featured in the cast were Rachel Jacobs, Beverly Rowland, Neil Barth, Mark Alston, Bryce Chamberlain, Coleman Creel, and Oscar Rowland. Original music by Roger Hoffman and Greg Hansen. Production assistant was Patrick Mead. Associate producer was Jeff Rader. Bradbury 13 was created, produced, and directed by Mike McDonough. Executive producer was Dean Van Eitert. This is Paul Frees speaking.
And speaking very well. Very well.
Woohoo! That was fun.
It was scary. I didn't think they'd ever get that lady out of there. They're going to dig up her stuff.
I know. Wow. I mean, she really lasted, didn't she?
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe he was nice and put a can of Pringles in there for her or something.
I don't, or maybe, you know, there was like a scuba diving tube leading to, I don't know, who knows. A vent.
And he would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those meddling kids.
Exactly.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
When your mandrake root starts a screaming, make sure it's not an old girlfriend. And you're not a dreamin'. There you go. All right. And I ran across this little. There we go.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry.
It was all a bad dream. It was all a bad dream.
It was all a bad dream. According to legend, when the mandrake root is dug up, it screams and kills all who hear it. But there is literature that includes complex directions for harvesting a mandrake root in relative safety. After this, the root can be handled without fear. But, wow. So
yes, it was all a bad dream.
All a bad dream. Yes, it was. About mandrake roots. What's that, vinyl? Which vinyl? Fogsbane bought a vinyl something.
I don't know. I just
Are you selling vinyl?
Speaking of vinyl, I wish to gosh that we could play some copyright material here because every year we do War of the Worlds, and there's one version I would really love to share if you've never heard it. Jeff Wayne's musical version is really, really cool. Narrated by Richard Burton, no less.
Yep. Very amazing story. I've had it on cassette and on CD, and a buddy of mine had it on vinyl. So, yeah, it's made the rounds.
I had it on vinyl, and I also had it on cassette, Dave, which I used when I was in the National Guard. A lot of times the 2 weeks summer camp was out at Camp Perry, which is a little past Sandusky. So you had enough time to listen to both sides of an, you know, so I could listen to parts one and two of War of the Worlds on the way out to National Guard, and on the way back home, parts three and four.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, when I was on ship, you had to take your own entertainment with you because you couldn't get, well, I think if you had like some type of crazy radio setup, you might be able to get something. But for the most part, you know, you're out at sea, you know, you have to have your own music on cassette back then.
I'm always at sea.
Are you?
See?
Yes. See? See?
See? You never heard that expression? I'm a little at
You're
sea.
You're always at sea?
I'm confused or addled.
Oh. Yeah. No, I'm just always confused. I don't know about at sea. I was at sea. I made it back to land. You know, I was still just as confused. I don't know.
Okay.
But, no, that was a fun little story, the Bradbury 13. Like
that
I
was
said,
chilling.
You feel suffocated, you know, waiting for her to get out of there.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird.
You do. You get anxious. Like, come on, dig her up already. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Mandrake, it's either Mandrake or Gingerroot, one of the two, actually walk. They move. Like where they're buried, they move. So, you know, you plant it and you come out the next night and, you know, it's 4 inches away from where it was. And you what the
ah.
Yeah, there are walking plants, which kicks back to that thing of the Day of the Triffids or something.
Yeah.
Walking plants, yeah. But no, we really do
and
have
Tabanga.
Walking plants here. Yeah.
Don't forget Tabanga.
Hey, but we still have another radio show to go yet.
My gosh,
we
do.
A whole lot of radio.
Titled suspiciously, The Scream from Inner Sanctum.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, two nights in a row.
That's right, and well worth it. Well worth it. Is this
Raymond? No.
No, this is Paul McGrath.
Okay.
He's still good.
He's just Mr. Host.
He's still good. And we have a broadcast date of?
January 16th, 1950.
Good evening, friends of the creaking door. This is your host to welcome you into the inner sanctum. Come on in. Well, let me tell you about the loot we picked up in our family. Mother got a new broom. Yeah, she needed it ever since she wrecked the old one in a forced landing on the roof last month. Uncle William got a fur-lined straitjacket. And dear, darling little Aunt Matilda got a new hatpin. Yes, her last one got stuck in the skull of her fourth husband. All right. Turn your lights low and your radio up. And remember that all the actors getting killed on this program are being well paid for it. The winter winds moaned around the gabled house like a wandering band of wailing women. As Caroline Giles, puzzled and frightened by something she's seen in the gathering dusk, makes her way into the living room. This is young Mrs. Giles' first night at the family mansion built by her husband's grandfather. Only this morning, the attractive bride arrived after a honeymoon trip in Europe. When she enters the huge, shadow-filled room, she notices the servant girl at the window. She's a young girl, the only other person in the house. And Caroline can see that she's scarcely able to control the terror she feels.
Mary?
Yes, ma'am.
What's going on out there?
Nothing. When will Mr. Giles be home?
He should be here within an hour. Why are those cars stopping out there?
Cars, Mrs. Giles?
Oh, really, Mary, you must see them as well as I do. Three of them stopped within a few minutes. Look, there's another one.
Maybe that's Mr. Giles.
No, the car isn't coming into the driveway. It's stopping outside. Who are these people, Mary?
I don't know.
Why should they stop outside? What did they want?
I don't know.
Oh, Mary. don't know. You don't know. No reason to become hysterical.
Mrs. Giles, come away from the window.
But why?
You don't know them. Oh, please come away from the window.
Mary, why? Now,
I warned you. They're throwing rocks through the window. Get down, Mrs. Giles. Get down on the floor. You'll be hurt.
But Mary...
Oh, please. Mrs. Giles, just pray that they don't come in here. Just pray that they don't.
Wait a minute, Mary. I hear sirens. It's the police.
Oh, the police. Oh, thank heaven. They'll make them go away.
Mrs. Giles, I'm Richard Croydon, the mayor of this town. I'm sorry we had to come here under these circumstances.
How do you do?
This is John Dent, our local chief of police.
Mrs. Giles, I'm very sorry about what happened tonight. The crowd is gone now. I'll do my best to see that it never happens again.
I've also come to offer what apologies I can. Must have been a frightful experience for you on your first day here. Our people may appear civilized enough, but in many ways we're a very primitive community. I suppose your husband told you that.
No, he didn't. But David told me about you, Mr. Croydon. He said you were the oldest friend he has. I believe you live down the road?
Yes, yes, that's right. That's how I happened to see those cars coming, and I phoned Chief Dent.
But why did those cars come, Mr. Croydon?
Why?
Well, yes. Why should those people who hardly know me do a thing like this?
Well, didn't David tell you?
Tell me what?
Where is David now?
He went to town. I expect him any minute.
Well, perhaps he'll tell you what you want to know when he returns.
Why can't you tell me?
I'm not sure that I care to.
Mr. Dent, perhaps you'll be kind enough to explain this.
Them people weren't after you, ma'am. They were after the man you married.
David? But what?
Dent, if Mr. Giles hasn't told her, I don't think it's your place to do so.
Well, the woman has a right to know. The reason them folks are trying to kill Mr. Giles is because they think he's a murderer. Some call him even worse than that.
What do you mean?
Mrs. Giles, 2 years ago, a series of killings began in this here county. Girls, young girls, four of them were found on lonely roads. Stabbed to death. Homicidal maniac, that's what the state police officer said.
And my husband?
Well, your husband was arrested for them crimes. He was tried right here, but they let him go. We didn't have enough evidence.
David, can't believe it. Why should they suspect him?
Well, he knew one of them girls, and, he had been sent away, ma'am.
Sent away? What are you talking about?
Well, everyone knew there was something wrong with him. He had to go to an asylum for a while.
That's quite enough, Dan. Mrs. Giles, I must tell you this. David was discharged from the rest home, completely cured. It was nothing more than a nervous breakdown. Dent, you have no right to frighten her like this.
I'm not frightened. And I'm very grateful to Mr. Dent for telling me what he did. I just want to know one thing. My husband was acquitted. Why should they still believe he's guilty?
Because since he left town 6 months ago, there ain't been none of these murders. Not a single one. Now that he's back, they'll start again.
That's what you believe, Mr. Dent?
Oh, no, ma'am, but that's what the folks are saying.
Thank you. And now, if you don't mind, I'd like to be alone.
Mrs. Giles, if there's anything I can
no,
do...
No, thank you. There's nothing. Good night, Mr. Croydon.
Good night. Come along, Ben.
Good night, ma'am.
Good night. Hello? Operator, will you give me the number of the railroad station, please? No. Never mind, operator. Don't bother.
Are you going to leave, Carolyn?
David, you heard.
Yes. And I heard everything else my very old friend, Mr. Dent, told you. I was behind the other door.
Then why didn't you come in?
Why ruin their fun? Besides, I was curious to see just what your reaction would be.
David, why did they have to tell me? Why couldn't you?
You think this was an easy thing to tell to a newly married bride?
I would have found out sooner or later.
I did plan to tell you, Carolyn, in due time. That's why I ordered Mary not to say anything.
Darling, it isn't true. This is all an insane dream, a nightmare.
No, Carolyn, it's not a dream, but in many ways it is a nightmare. Were you going to run away from me, Carolyn? Is that why you phoned the station?
Yes.
Carolyn, if you want to leave me, I can't blame you. I realize it may be asking a little too much of any woman to be my wife and to live here.
Why did you come back, QT?
Because I want to prove to them that I'm not what they think I am. And I was hoping you'd help me. I thought maybe you loved me enough for that. Carolyn, I'm terribly sorry it must end this way.
I'm not going to leave, David.
Carolyn, I hope you understand what you're saying. You may be risking your life by remaining here.
I love you, David. I'll risk it.
I want you to be certain, because in the end I may fail and be put to death.
To death?
Yes, there are going to be other murders.
Other
murders? Don't ask me how I know this, but I'm almost positive that sometime tonight a girl in or near this community will be killed, brutally stabbed to death. I'll have to go out tonight and see if I can prevent it. Do you still want to remain?
Why are you telling me this?
Because I want to know if you really love me or if you said what you did to placate a madman, to quiet a homicidal maniac who may still murder you. Are you going to stay, Carolyn?
Yes. I'm going to stay, David.
Now, just try to calm down.
And I saw them. I saw them.
Mary,
out there.
Try to pull yourself together. Tell me what you saw.
There was a man out there. A man moving around.
Are you sure of it, Mary? I don't see anyone.
Well, maybe you can't see him from here, but I saw him from the window of my room.
All right. Let's look out the window of your room.
I don't want you to think I'm seeing things. I'm not the kind of girl who sees things.
I didn't say you were, Mary, but I... Well, I don't notice anything unusual from your window either.
You don't see anything?
Just the lawn, the tree. Mary, I know we've all been under strain today. I guess we're a little jumpy, aren't we?
I guess so. But I wish Mr. Giles were here. I don't like us two being alone.
I know, Mary. But it can't be helped. Now, come, dear. I think you'd better go back to bed.
But I'm afraid to be alone in here. They can get in through the window.
Then we'll close the shutters. Help me, Mary.
All right, ma'am.
There we are. The outside doors are all closed.
Yes, I locked it myself, but... Well, still, this is a very old house. They can get in.
Well, there's a lock on your door that works quite well. You can lock the door from the inside, and then you'll be as safe as you can possibly be.
All right. I'll do that when you go.
Very well, Mary. I'll go back to my room. I'm sure you'll sleep now. Good night.
I hope so. Good night, Mrs. Giles.
Did you lock the door, Mary?
Yes, I just did. I'm turning out the light now. I'm sorry I troubled you, Mrs. Giles.
Good night.
Good night. Oh, she's right. I must be hearing things. Mrs. Giles! There's someone in here! Oh, my God, my hand! Mrs. Giles!
Mary?
He was locked in here with me. Help me, Mrs. Giles!
Mary!
Oh, he's got a knife. I can feel it, a knife! Oh, no, let go of me, please. No, no.
Well, friends, this is your host again. You ready to go on with our story of married bliss? Bliss. You know, if Caroline had only listened to this program, she'd have realized that it's always a mistake to marry a man who has a weakness for murdering the domestic help. It not only makes house cleaning difficult, but creates a terrible servant problem. That there is one compensation in marrying a homicidal maniac. When you'd call your mate crazy, you'd be so right. Well, let's get on with our story. As you remember, Caroline couldn't break into Mary's room, and now she rushes to the telephone and dials the operator.
Hello? Get me the police. Hurry, please. This is Mrs. Carolyn Giles. Would you please send someone right away? I think there's been a murder.
Hang up, Carolyn. Hang up that phone. What's the matter with you? Why didn't you do as I told you? I don't want the police to know about this until we're ready.
That room. You just came out of Mary's room.
Yes, I saw her.
Saw her? You were in there all the time. You were locked in the room with her. You killed her.
Carolyn.
You murdered her. They're right about you. You murdered her.
Carolyn, you're hysterical. Stop it now. Stop. I'm sorry I had to do that. Now, you must get a grip on yourself.
Yes, David, I'll be all right. I'm all right now. How did you get into her room?
I heard screams when I passed the car. The window to her room was open and I climbed through. I saw her on the bed and then I unlocked the door and came in here.
You found the window open?
Mm.
But I locked it myself. I bolted the shutters.
Well, it's open now. When did you bolt the window?
A little while ago. The murderer must have been in the room hiding, but she locked herself in.
I guess he escaped through the window.
Yes. Perhaps that's what happened.
You still think I killed her?
I don't know what to think anymore. The way you came from her room.
I explained that.
Yes, I suppose you did.
Carolyn, now listen to me. If I killed her, do you think I'd be talking to you now? Here, look.
Done.
Hmm. If I'd murdered Mary, the next step would be to kill you. And you see how easy it is for me to do it. Now, Carolyn, you believed in me before. I'm asking you to believe in me again. I don't want the police to know I left this house tonight. Dent's like the rest of them. He hates me. He'd be glad to accuse me of this crime. Now, Carolyn, I want you to say I was home all night with you.
And if I don't?
I've got this gun, Carolyn. If you let me down, nothing much will matter then. Now, that might be the police, Carolyn. I'm going to open the door.
Good evening, Mr. Giles.
Good evening, Dent.
You got here quickly. Maybe that's because I was kind of expecting to come.
Oh, have you been watching my house?
I ain't saying. When I got that radio call, I didn't lose any time. Well, Mrs. Giles, you phoned in something about a murder?
Yes, our girl, Mary, she's in there.
Huh. Mr. Giles?
Are you accusing me of this too, Dent?
It's mighty funny, right here in your own home.
This time, I can easily prove that I had nothing to do with it. My wife and I were together all night.
Is this right, Mrs. Giles?
That's right, Mr. Dent.
Is that Harvey Dent? I don't know.
I think that's a different kind of dent.
Sounds a little dented.
I got dents in my head.
Hello, Al Dente?
Yes.
Okay.
I know Al. Al Dente.
Yeah, hey, that guy. He lives down the block from me. Yeah, sure. this is weird in that at first the wife is like, no, I'm going to stick by this guy. And then she's like, I think you killed everybody. Very odd. What the heck is that?
She's wishy-washy.
She's a wishy-washy wife.
It's what happens. It's what happens.
It happens all the time.
Oh, we're sitting there, and all of a sudden I got this weird deja vu. I'm going, wait a second, is this Friday? Because
no,
it's not.
It just feels that way because we're doing radio on Halloween
week.
Yes,
we're doing radio.
This is Wednesday, day two of Halloween week, tomorrow.
Yes.
Day three, we got eerie houses. Ooh.
Yeah, we got a full 2-hour show again tomorrow.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah.
It's like a marathon.
Who doesn't like a good haunted house? Yeah, there we go.
Yep, haunted house stories, and then Great Apes on Friday and War of the Worlds
Great
on Saturday.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So there you go.
Yeah, we got whole bunch of Halloween fun on the radio. Mm-hmm.
Yep, your week is planned.
I have a really lame joke for you guys. How many monsters can do math?
How many monsters can do math?
Yes.
I give. How many monsters can
three
do math?
Three or four.
None, unless you count Dracula. Isn't that bad?
Ouch.
Gar. Gar, turn off the Sesame Street. Turn off the Sesame
okay.
Street.
All right. Wow. There you go.
What wonderful count.
Yes. Oh, I have so many. I have a Count Doll, a Count Dolly, and he is just so freaking cool with the cape and everything. And it's just like, wow. I had the Count and Animal and Cookie Monster and maybe Oscar the Grouch hand puppets as a kid. And those things were just, they were cool. They were just so cool to have. If you like monsters, that's where you start, right?
Yes.
You know,
Cookie Monster should be everyone's first monster.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have several of those that were
Although
kicked
I question
out by child
his,
guidance toys.
I question his eating etiquette.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, they had a puppet. Okay, they came out with this. I mean, they're really thinking ahead. They came out with Child Guidance Toys, 1970, let's say four or three, something like that. They came out with a Cookie Monster puppet, and the mouth was open so that it would actually, you could put anything into it, and it would just fall down through the body, but it looked like, rah, 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 like he's eating. It was so funny.
Yeah.
So hilarious. It might
Good
even
stuff.
Have come with cookies, little cardboard cookies or something, but it was just so, I actually have somewhere around here, not only do I have the loose puppets still in really good shape, but I've got some of the boxes of the that they can't. So there you go. You're getting the double
Ooh,
whammy there.
The Ooh. Double whammy. Let's wrap
the
up.
The double whammy.
Sanctum.
Box, yeah.
We got go. Enough time to wrap up the scream.
Let's go.
And we'll be back.
David, come in. I understand that Dent questioned you again this morning.
Yes, but he didn't get anywhere. I think even he's beginning to get the idea that I'm not a murderer.
I see.
Oh, Carolyn, dear.
Oh, hello there. David, why didn't you warn me your friend was coming tonight?
Well, I phoned Richard only a few minutes ago. You see, Carolyn, I have to go out.
Go out?
Yeah. I didn't want to leave you alone after everything that's happened.
I know, but... Well, couldn't we come with you, David?
No, I'm afraid not.
Why not?
Well, it might be dangerous.
David, where are you going?
I'm sorry, dear, but I can't tell you. It won't be a long trip. It's only about 20 miles or so. That's all the information I can give you.
Has this something to do with these murders?
Perhaps.
Now, David, I wouldn't advise you to take matters into your own hands.
I'm afraid I have to, Richard. You see, the police haven't gotten very far, and my life is at stake.
Your life?
Isn't it obvious? The people are stirred up about these crimes. Who can tell when one of them may take it into his head to murder me? It's becoming a matter of the killer's life or my own. Furthermore, there's another reason why I must solve this. A reason I can't divulge right now.
Why not?
Darling, please don't ask me. I think that after tonight, all this will be over. Bye, Richard. Goodbye, Carolyn.
Bye. Richard?
Yes?
What did he mean by another reason?
Well, Carolyn, if he's right about the murderer, then the next logical victim will be a girl, an attractive girl who's very close to him. So that people will suspect him even more. And the most likely person is yourself.
Ten o'clock. Did he tell you how long we'd stay away, Richard?
No, he didn't. Shall I deal another round? That must be David.
Hello? David, are you all right, darling? Well, when will you be home? All right, I'll tell Richard. Goodbye. David's on his way home. He'll be here in an hour.
Where did he call from?
A town called Waverly. He says he knows who the killer is.
That's impossible.
How do you know?
Because if he knew, he'd never have made that call.
I don't understand.
It was a perfect signal to the murderer.
Murderer?
It told him that he was safe. That he had all the time he needs. A full hour.
Richard. You.
Please. I must warn you not to do anything foolish. It will only make matters worse for yourself.
What do you have in your hand?
A knife. You see, I simply press this button and it snaps open. Try to control yourself, Carolyn. Don't try to fight the inevitable. Take my advice and submit to what will come. It will be less painful.
Let go of me.
You see how futile it is to struggle. I have the knife at your throat now. I have only to move my arm, and it's all over.
Why don't you? Why are you waiting?
There's no rush. For once, I have a little time.
Time?
Time seems to extend the experience. I must warn you not to scream. The moment you do, it will all come to an end, suddenly, violently. Screams are dangerous. One can never tell who hears them.
Take the knife away.
No.
Please.
Fear seems to do something to your features, Carolyn. You look extraordinarily beautiful. And I must compliment you on your self-control. You still haven't even raised your voice.
You can't get away with this, Richard. David will come home and find you.
That's not quite how it will happen. David will come home and find you. I shall have the rare pleasure of seeing his reaction. And then it will be his turn.
You're going to kill him?
Yes, it will be a new experience. I've never murdered a man before.
It can't possibly work. You'll be caught.
I plan to be. But I shall plead self-defense. Everyone will believe me because I'll tell them he murdered you. It's very difficult not to scream, isn't it, Carolyn?
They won't believe you. They'll never believe you.
Oh, yes, they will. My police commissioner hates David because he was freed after Dent arrested him. And his position also depends upon me. Oh, I admire you, Carolyn. None of the others held out this long. You must almost be insane with fear and terror, aren't you? And yet...
I won't scream, Richard. I won't.
In the end, you will.
I won't.
You must.
I won't.
Really are extraordinary, Carolyn.
I won't. Carolyn! Someone help!
Carolyn.
Don't understand. You were here.
Almost all evening. I phoned from a neighbor's house to make him force his hand. I got back just in time.
Still alive.
Yes. Richard.
David. Did you know? You couldn't have been that clever.
I suspected you, Richard, but I wasn't certain till tonight.
It was a trap. And Carolyn the bait. All a trick.
I'm afraid that's what it was, Richard. Why did you make them think it was me?
Why? Because you were a Giles. Always a little too clever. Never quite one of us. But you'll die for this, David. You'll be blamed for this and the other murders. I've left letters accusing you of the crimes. And Dent will believe them. Even over your wife's testimony. You die for this. They'll kill you.
He's dead.
David, is it true what he said about the letters?
Probably. Dent will never believe me.
Good evening, Mr. Giles.
Dent.
Yeah. Been out there all night. When I heard the shots, I came running in. So you killed him.
Yes, but I had to, Dent. He was going to murder my wife.
That's true. He's the homicidal maniac you've been looking for. You've got to believe that, Mr. Dent.
Of course I believe it, ma'am. Been suspecting him for a long time. Ever since he spread them stories to folks about Mr. Giles. And I heard what he said before he died. You've got nothing to fear now, Mrs. Giles. You and your husband can live here and we'll be proud to have you. And some folks will be mighty ashamed about what they've been saying and doing. I reckon I'd better call in, get them to take this man away.
Ha, 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 ha.
I'll bet you thought David was crazy, but he fooled you, didn't he? As the squirrel said to the walnut tree, you're still not as nutty as people. And that brings us to the moral of this story, which is taken from a retired witch who once said,
why slice your husband's head off when it's so easy to nag him to death?
Oh, here's a little thought to take to bed. Never murder your enemies, because then you'll have no one to hate but yourself.
Inner Sanctum has been brought to you through the facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
We heard that moral. Let's hear another one. Anytime now. There we go.
Who was this for?
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Marriage would be taken more seriously if the vows were written as for better or hearse.
Yes, yes, yes. Just want to take a minute to thank you guys for making this a great Halloween. We're not even halfway through yet. As we complete day two of Halloween here on Eerie House. Tomorrow night, it's Eerie Houses. That'll be at 7:30. Friday at 8:30, Great Apes. And then Saturday, we finish off the week and Halloween week with War of the Worlds from Buffalo.
War of the Worlds. Or the week your mother-in-law visited. No, I don't know how that works.
And as usual, after the Saturday show at 8 o'clock, then you want to head on over to them Twitches for...
Yes. Horrible Horror starring Dar the Ghoul, if you will. Blah, blah.
I will.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's not get too sad here.
Here's something to get sad about. I just saw someone post something. They said that a classic film called The Candyman. Now, that's 1992. I don't consider that classic, but...
No. I even have a hard time with 80s stuff being considered classic.
No, I don't know. No, you know. No, my classics are the 1930s or 40s, you know?
Yeah, they got to be black and white for me to consider them classic.
It was... It's time for that 1992 creepy classic Candyman. And I was like, ooh, what?
Who can make the sunshine?
Exactly. It's the Sprinkle return of Sammy Davis you. Jr. from the grave.
Yes.
Now, see, that would be, you know, there you go. That's classic.
There's a
Candyman.
Guess. There's a guess. If we can get Sammy Davis, that'll be... We will have Lord Bloodraw on the 6th
Bloodraw,
of November.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That'd be a week from Saturday, I guess.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
Dale, did you say that you did, or you were thinking about posting up a bat box at your house? Did you ever do that?
I have a bat box. It has not drawn bats. It was invaded and taken over and commandeered by a woodpecker.
Really? Well,
yes, he stole it.
I guess.
He stole it and made a nest in there. But we'll be back again at 7:30 tomorrow night. That's Eastern Standard Time. Thanks again, CW, Fogsbane, and anybody else that's listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
Oops, the castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Don't come alone.
Don't come alone.
There we go. So they didn't get the candle, but they got everything else. That's good.
They got everything but the candle, yeah.
Everything
since it's not a birthday cake, it doesn't matter if they didn't get the candle.
I want my Father's Day cake. So I was scanning Tubi again for more of those wonderful documentaries, and they had a really good one. It's a recent documentary because they talked about finishing it up, making it during the pandemic. And it was a really nice look at anthology horror movies. And they actually started in the silent era. There were a couple German films that had little short stories. Couple German silent films. And then, of course, they talked about Dead of Night from 1945. A under-discussed movie, I think. It's pretty good. And they got into even the Twice Told Tales. Remember that one, Gar? Twice Told Tales?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, yeah. The two... Amicus films, which was, you know, like Hammer Jr. had a couple of them. Oh, they did The Vault of Horror and Tales from the Crypt in the 70s.
There was one crazy one where... a guy checks into this place. I think it's near the sea or somewhere, but he checks into this hotel, motel, hostel, something, whatever, black and white, silent. And he runs across all kinds of weird stuff, to include vampires, I think, and Germanic, I believe, in nature.
Oh, yeah, I'm not familiar with that particular one. But I thought that was a great documentary to make, because there were so many really good anthology movies, and of course they became more popular when you started getting like the Twilight Zone movie and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Someone just tossed out something I'm going to give to you guys on the old Facebook there. Count Pee-wee.
Good God.
Pee-wee.
Yeah.
The children of the night. What did they make?
get that mirror away from me.
It was all a bad dream. It was all a bad dream. Yes.
It was all a bad dream.
I never drink wine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it was all a bad dream.
All a bad dream.
All a bad dream.
I'll never use that one up. That's a good one.
Yeah, that one. Oh, boy.
There's some sound bites that just never get old.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it was all a bad dream.
Was all measuring.
Now, what's the source of that soundbite again?
That's from Chicken Man.
Chicken Man.
Chicken Man. He's
is
everywhere.
It Chicken Man?
He's everywhere.
Miss Hellfinger goes to a psychiatrist.
Yes.
Psychiatrist is Boris Karloff. Bela Lugosi.
Bella. Yeah.
Bella.
And no matter what she tells him, he keeps saying, it was all a measuring. And the number 7 or 13 or 4, I forget, or something. Oh, something with a number, you know. It's like very, very bizarre.
So I still have a little bit of Halloween viewing. I'm trying to squeeze in every here and there. Once the dog goes to sleep for the night, I can maybe get a half an hour of television before I crash.
Ah, there you go. Are you visiting any from your pet? I mean, I know it's like, you know, ad nauseum by now, but. I still enjoy the Great Pumpkin from Charlie Brown.
I dug up. I had to watch the Paul Lynn special, Halloween special again. That was fun.
Yes, Paul Lynn did a good Halloween special. It is, and not only does he got the music guest, but he's got two witches on there, and it's just back in the day when those witches were still around. It was great.
Yep.
Oh man.
Yeah, the Great Pumpkin is always a good annual view this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it never gets old either.
Yep.
I like the Garfield Christmas special or Thanksgiving Halloween special.
Mm-hmm.
That was his first one, and he got an Emmy for that.
Kidding.
He is so evil to that dog Odie, and it's
like,
I like Odie. It's like poor Odie.
But cats tend to be, especially if they're bigger than the dog or roughly the same size as the dog.
Exactly.
They will torment them.
Yes, which is like either you've got a really big cat or a really small dog.
Yeah.
For that one, you know, it's like. Wow.
But I've even seen small cats bully bigger dogs too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because cats will. I'll tell you.
Cats can be a-holes, but I've had two really, and I have one now. A really good boy. That he's a coward, so he's not a bully.
Back when I had the kitty cats, they were great. They were fantastic, wonderful, you know. And back when I had dogs, they were great and wonderful, you know.
Yeah.
And I did have a household that had both. That had a dog and a cat in it. Oh, I wanted to ask you, Dale, did your cat ever get to the point where it met your dog, or it's still like...
No, he's still... Well, and we're inviting him up and trying to get him to work over the fear. But he's not ready yet. He's almost ready. He's longing. He sometimes waits at the top of the stairs like, I think I'm going to make a break for it. No, it's that animal's there. Ah, he runs.
Oh, gosh.
He's a wuss.
Wow. It has been many months now. That is amazing.
Let's put it this way. His sister used to beat the hell out of him.
Mm-hmm.
She did. She was mean to him. She was very mean. He'd come upstairs with a big scar on his face from her back feet, you know. She'd kick him in the face. Yeah, she was a meanie.
Really? Wow.
I never had a cat like that had such a bad attitude like that, Miss Gray. She loved me and no one else. And I mean nobody else. Even my wife, which is very surprising. My wife can charm almost any living thing, including insects.
Mm-hmm.
We pet bumblebees this time of year. They're dormant.
I've heard of that. I've never run across
sluggish.
That myself. But.
They're very sluggish, and you can pet them if you don't make sudden moves. And they're like, okay, whatever.
Right.
But we've had some ugly suckers this year too. Bald-faced hornets, massive nest. We actually had to call the Orkin guy. This is a massive nest. I was going to try it myself, and my wife said, no, these things are full of hate. We better get some pros.
Yes. I'm not sure how it was right around the time of the pandemic. We were, it was the first introduction of some type of really nasty hornet, a killer hornet, something.
Oh, the murder hornet.
Killer
hornet,
yeah.
The murder hornets, yeah. Those, yeah.
Murder
yes.
hornet. Yeah.
They're supposed to be rather large.
I don't know if
they...
Yes, but, and they will go and they will kill off an entire honey beehive or something. They're very not nice.
Very harmful to bees.
Mm-hmm.
They're just bullying
that.
Bees can be resourceful. You know how they beat up on the wasps? They smother them with their bodies. They actually fry from the inside. They make them overheat.
Oh, yeah, and they can do stuff with their wings to make them even hotter, I think.
Yeah, yep, I think you're right.
Yeah, it's so crazy, crazy.
We must be watching the same clip.
What, the ding? I don't, oh.
And Mad Monster Party.
Now,
Mad Monster Party is fun to watch.
I move my phone away from the mic.
You know what is crazy about the Mad Monster? I like the Mad Monster, I really do, but it's... The pacing is just all wrong. It needs faster pacing.
Yeah,
it's a real slow
ride. Yep.
It is. It's a beautiful piece, but they just needed to change that pacing, just zippy zippy faster. And there's no way that you can edit it to make it move along. They'd have to.
Somebody's
tried. Somebody'd have to. Has someone?
I don't know. It sounded like you did.
No, not me. No, I can find no answer to it. I wish I could, because I really enjoy it. I just wish it was.
Yeah, it drags
a little.
It
had a faster tempo.
But you're right. It is beautifully made. The characterizations of the monsters are awesome. The voices are great. The story's cute. It just takes forever to get there.
And what's another twist is this. Okay, I can understand it with the stop action, that it's difficult to speed that up or whatever. But then
they
had a cartoon.
Harryhausen.
Yeah, right.
It can be done.
No, well, okay, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I agree, out of season, but moved along. It was fast. Boom, 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 you know?
Yeah.
This one, not. And what's odd is there is a cartoon of the same name or close to it by Rankin-Bass cartoon. It's just as slow, and I don't know why.
I don't know.
Same pacing, you know? It was wild. But I really do enjoy that one, the Mad Monster folks.
Oh, and the Addams Family color Halloween deal.
Yes.
Or was that a Christmas deal, maybe? Maybe that was Christmas. They might have had a Halloween one, too.
I would hope so.
Blossom
that's
Rock
they
was
really
not
should...
in that one. She had been deceased already. And
Carolyn
Jones was just about at the end of her life.
When
that came out.
No good when they start to check out, I tell you.
Can't believe that John Astin is still with us, God bless him. And Wednesday, Loring is still with us. And that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, and Felix. Is Felix still around?
Well, I just saw this. Someone posted this to me and said it's a crazy world where the kid that played Eddie Munster is up on the testifying stand in a jury or something, or a trial, from Stand Your Ground Murder or something. I'm like, what? Wait, what?
he bit someone on the neck.
Yeah, it was I'm sure. It was Wolf Wolf's fault, I'm sure.
It was Wolf Wolf. I blame Wolf Wolf.
It was fighting in self-defense, yes.
Yes. Please, Rob Zombie, don't screw it up.
Oh, I hope. I mean, it's a comedy, and you know, it should be a whole lot of fun.
I know his tendencies, and I'm just scared to death that it's going to be too adult or too vulgar or too gory for the Munsters.
Right.
Come on, it's the Munsters. Uh-huh. But then again, he's always loved it, so maybe he has a good appreciation for what it was.
We can only hope.
Yep.
Ran across one last blurb here about witches on Family Feud, which was we asked the Grendel family to name a dish. Served white wine. For the steal, show me Orphan. Oh,
yes.
So bad. It goes with white wine. Orphan.
Yes.
Oh, that's good and Halloween-y.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that was... I just grabbed and slashed a board, slammed a border on it and sent it to you guys. Wow.
And I like a lot of the comic movies for Halloween, too, like the comedy horror like Zombieland and others. Did you see that one with Adam Driver and Bill Murray? What the heck was the name of that? It was pretty funny.
Yes. Bill Murray plays himself as a dead guy, and he's hilarious.
Yep.
He's hilarious. The Bill Murray zombie was just delicious. I don't know.
You're thinking of Zombieland. There was another one with Adam Driver and Bill Murray are policemen, and there's some kind of zombie apocalypse or something happening.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that one then.
Yeah, it's a newer film.
Wow.
It's only a couple of years old, maybe.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember the name of it.
Hmm.
I
I can just go look up Bill Murray and it'll pop right out.
There you go. IMDb is a wonderful thing.
Yes. There's a new, and this should be coming out. They really should have planned this to come out. If it hasn't, if it isn't out now, it should be within this week. It should be out. And if they miss the boat on this, they're crazy. There's a new Ghostbusters that is an actual nod to the old Ghostbusters that really sounds tasty from the trailers I've seen. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
Yeah.
Where it's a bunch, it's the children of the original Ghostbusters are out on a farm, and they find the old car, and they go out, and there's ghosts out there. And that this should definitely be Halloween Fair or around, you know, right around this time.
It's called The Dead Don't Die from 2019.
Okay.
Okay, sorry.
Internet Movie Database.
Yep. The Dead Don't Die.
Yeah.
And I haven't
I'm gonna
seen
be talk-
the new Zombieland yet called Double Tap.
I'm going to be kicking out something from 1979 called The Halloween That Almost Wasn't, which was, I believe it was an ABC live-action thing with Judd Hirsch as Count Dracula and Mariette Hartley as a witch. And John Shock as the Frankenstein monster, which, odd, because in the reboot of the Munsters, he was Herman.
Yeah, he played Herman Munster, yeah, in the reboot, yeah.
And Henry Gibson is an Igor character, and Jack Riley from Newhart is a werewolf in this.
Ah.
Jack Riley's out of Cleveland. He's one of our Cleveland guys.
Woo-hoo!
He escaped.
There you go. Yeah. And he's a very well-dressed werewolf. He's in a three-piece suit with a tie. He's a werewolf. So, you know, a lot of different stuff. Where did I want to go with the Ghostbuster thing? Ghostbusters.
I think it's called Ghostbusters Afterlife. He plays himself as Peter Venkman.
Oh, he is actually in it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I cannot think.
Probably as a cameo or something.
Ghostbusters Afterlife. Yeah, I've seen. What? There we go. 2021. Let's see. When are they going to release this thing? Is it already out?
Dan Aykroyd wrote it. Co-wrote it.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. When's it come? When's it theaters? Did it say? See Showtimes and Tickets. Tickets?
Yeah,
it
must
it's
be
out
there.
No, it's next month. Why did they do that? This is the perfect Halloween thing. November 18th. Yeah. So,
yeah, just too late.
Well, yeah. It's like it's already in the can. Let it go. Yeah, I guess it's fighting some other thing. Well, maybe there's a new Halloween or something coming out. Halloween 28 or something. I don't know.
Well, there was a new Halloween. It was a streaming one. I think it hit the theaters, too, but it was on one of those streaming.
Yeah.
Hulu?
With Jamie Lee in it.
Yeah, it had Jamie Lee in it. Yep.
I'm dying here. Okay, so Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Annie Potts are in the in this new one. Annie Potts, too. They got her. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know.
She was great in the first movie.
Oh, man. Yeah.
The secretary.
Like, yeah.
Yep.
This should be that magic with having the whoever the nemesis was in the first film where they're in the mayor's office. And they're talking, and they just...
Oh, yeah.
They talk so bad about that guy.
Yes, this man has no something.
Yes, that one, yes.
Class, was it? Oh. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah. Something about his anatomy. I don't know. But it was definitely hilarious. Oh, and they got Ernie Hudson is in it, too. Oh, there you go. So, yeah, and they picked him up. Did they pick him up on the second movie? Can't remember, but... Sigourney Weaver's in it. They got everybody. They got everybody. Wow.
Alive, I hope.
Everybody that's alive, yeah. They just don't have Dr. Venkman. I think it's Venkman. Is that the one character that's not in there? Yeah, I think. No, wait. Let me see. No, because Bill Murray was Venkman.
Yeah, Bill Murray.
I can't think of the guy.
In.
Yeah, the
Harold,
one guy
Harold
that
Ramis
passed is, away.
Harold Ramis,
yes,
is a character.
Yes, who, whatever that was. I can't remember the name. But, yeah. I mean, this is a great time for, well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how, because remember 6 months ago, AMC Theater said, we're going out of business, and now they're back. But I don't know the feel of people going out and going to movie theaters again. I mean, is that going on? Are people doing all this stuff via Netflix, or I don't know?
People are, but they're reluctant, so there's a lot of people that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
But
right. Go back
and
to the
some
heyday
of the movies are released at the same time on a streaming station as they are in the theater, so why go to the theater except for the theater experience and the great popcorn?
Right. And, well, that's where people, you know, have the opportunity and the economics. They can make their own little at-home theater experience. You know, that's a way to go. If the world was just my oyster, I would definitely have part of the house set up as an entertainment thing like that, or big, huge TV with a, you know, big, crazy, insane screen.
Theater
seating. Yeah. Heck yeah. Why not? You know. takes me back. But no, we really did get the opportunity to live through, you know, and this is like old fogey talk, but we really did, I feel, get the opportunity to really get the theater experience and so many others that are just gone. Some of these things you cannot recreate, you know.
I remember some of the old classy theaters had these big curtains and stuff.
Yes.
Marble steps in front of the screen.
And we had one that had red velvet for the seatings were red velvet, and they cleaned them all and everything. And the popcorn machines were very vintage and well kept up and everything. It was just it was an experience to go to the theater. And then that goes right down the gutter when you end up at the drive-in.
And not watch the movie if you got the right date.
And it depends. Some people actually would go to the drive-in, you know, alone, and you know, go and sit there, and you know, hey, there you go. That was it was a whole different kind of theater feel for that. Did you or your family ever do the drive-in there, Dave?
Once I took my family to the drive-in, and it was the Batman Beetlejuice double feature, and we watched the Batman. And then my ex didn't want to stick around for the Beetlejuice. Well, my oldest and I were really getting into it, and she started fussing, and my youngest started fussing, and that's it. I'm never bringing this family to a drive-in again, and I didn't.
I had a Chevy S10 truck, and it had a nice fiberglass cap on the back, and then I put carpeting in it. It made it easier to move my DJ equipment in and out, you know, just slide it across the carpet. But it was fun to take it to the drive-in with the kids when they were little.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We'd all sit in the back of the truck, you know, and open it up. And we was comfortable back there. Hey.
This is going way back to my kiddie land days. I remember being a little kid and getting taken to the drive-in and seeing Bed Knobs and Broomsticks up on the big screen at a drive-in.
Ooh.
What the heck was that? Oh, okay.
I don't know if my parents, they must have taken me once, I think. I don't know.
Right. Well, like I said, that's the when I was a wee kid experience of that. That was the first time that I have recollection of it.
I went a lot more after I learned to drive and went and didn't watch the movie much.
Right. The only other one of my knowledge
what
was I saw
money.
One.
No, it
had,
wasn't.
It,
no,
I
no,
saw
it wasn't. Not for me, anyway.
I saw a slasher movie at the drive-in.
Did you?
And it had Stacy Keach in it as the murderer.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was.
You sure wasn't a Cheech and Chong movie? No, I'm kidding.
No, but I did. I saw a Cheech and Chong film when I think I was I'm sorry. I think I went to a Cheech and Chong movie by myself. For some of us, we go, you know, hey, I want to go see that movie, and you go by yourself.
Yeah,
I
went to the movies myself quite a bit.
And I went to a Cheech and Chong movie, and I'm not part of that, but I enjoy it. It's funny humor. So I went and I sat down, and I got the popcorn and the drink and everything. And it starts out the Columbia lady, you know, and it's a serious Columbia lady intro. And somebody whistled at her. And I was like, this is going to be a great movie.
Yes. You're in for a ride now.
Yeah. You knew something was going to go
when
on.
Lady Liberty's getting catcalls.
Mm-hmm. That was...
Now,
there was
a cartoon that did a thing where her skirt blew up. What was that? Was that
there's
the Roger Rabbit, maybe?
Yeah.
Was that
could
maybe
be.
Roger
could
Rabbit?
Sounds, yeah. Yeah, it could be.
I don't know.
Let's see. This is really
I don't remember.
Film. Yeah.
I don't remember.
It could have even been the Animaniacs, but I think it was in a movie. I'm not sure.
Hmm.
An intro to a movie. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know, but it is Halloween week, and we need to save our energy to finish off with three more nights of madness.
Yes, we do. Time to clock out. Yes. So, spike up Mr. Durante. See what happens.
Good night, Dave. Good night, Gar.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.
Yeah.
Good night.
Good night.
It's time
to say. Any second, toast is going to be ready.
Good night.
Good night. What for
this take? Oh, there it goes.
Good night. We've had a few laughs.
Might be ready
to fight.
Well, there it goes.
Horrible, what we'll think. As he could think and do.
Oh, come on.
Here he goes. Self-destruct in 10 seconds.
Yes. Okay, I think it's done.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Here he is, recommends.